All right. I was sitting here thinking about trying to do some of this Bible study that you missed. I hadn't really considered it until coming up here. I do not have my inspired notes, but I think I know it well enough. I could probably take some time and go through that real quickly, the parts that you missed. You might recall, I was told that you heard that I began with the final Bible study in the book of Daniel instead of starting in Daniel 11:36, which is where we left off in February. I started by going back to Daniel chapter 8, and the reason was because there are two overall themes that you see in the book of Daniel. One, of course, are the four major kingdoms, chapter 2, chapter 7. They are talked about in part in chapter 8, actually in part again in chapter 11. Anyhow, the reason I went back to chapter 8, which is very fascinating because that's the first chapter where you read about the abomination of desolation in conjunction with these kingdoms. And there you have some very specific prophecies being given. I won't go back, I'll just kind of tell you about it since I think you heard this part of it last week. But in the book of Daniel, you have the ram and the he-goat, male goat. The ram has two horns, one higher than the other, and of course represents, as the angel Gabriel tells Daniel later in the chapter, that this represents the Medo-Persian Empire, and of course Persia is the higher horn, and the Medes are the lower horn, because the Persians were the stronger of the two. They were a confederation. It is conquered soon after 200 years by a ram coming out of Greece. And the ram, of course, is Alexander the Great. In a very swift battle, he goes all the way from Macedonia, Greece, all the way to India. He annihilates the Persian army. In 3 years, he has conquered Persia, all of the Persian Empire. And then he suddenly dies. And it's been conjecture as to, was he drunk? Did he have a fever? Did he have both? Something killed him at a young age. Then there was a fight on for dividing up of his kingdom. He had a son by a Persian princess. One of the four generals who later was part of the division of the empire had that son killed. So that he would not be in line for part of Alexander's kingdom. But he was the rightful heir, that one, the son of the Persian princess that he, I guess, won in battle by defeating the Persians and had a son by her. Anyhow, the four divisions, the first two were not all that significant as far as Bible prophecy. You had Cassander, was given, he had Macedonia and Greece and all of that area of Europe. Lysimachus got Asia Minor, which is Turkey today. Ptolemy Soter I got Egypt, which is not the Egyptian borders today, but Libya, Ethiopia, all the way down the Horn of Africa, that type of thing. It was pretty broad. And then you had Seleucus Nicator, who got Syria, but more than just Syria, not the Syrian borders you see today. Syria, his capital was apparently in Antioch and not Damascus. Went through Babylon. He was in charge. He was over Babylon. He went all the way to the Indus River of India. What you see now as we come forward to the 11th chapter, which we covered in February, at least almost of it, you had the king of the north, who was first, the first one was Seleucus Nicator. And the king of the south, who was Ptolemy. Ptolemy, by the way, I said he had Egypt. He also had Palestine and Jerusalem. And there's where the rub came in as time went on, because an individual came along by the name of Antiochus Epiphanes, who was not he was not the one who was supposed to be the ruler of the northern kingdom. He was able to come in and get it, while the one who was in line was in prison by the Romans in Rome. Anyhow, he took it over. He's the one that made war with the Egyptians. And he came through Jerusalem on his way to Egypt. The Egyptians were handling him pretty well, in fact. So when he came back, he was quite mad. He killed over 80,000 Jews in Jerusalem and sent 40,000 into slavery. He desecrated the temple and, sacrificed swine on the altar out in the open, put the statue of Jupiter Olympus in the Holy of, well, I don't know if he went in the Holy of Holies, but at least he was in the holy place, the first room, where he put it, where people would see it. And all of that, and then, of course, anyone who was caught either circumcising or keeping the Sabbath or reading the Jewish Torah was to be executed on sight everything. So he truly was a individual who was a type of that which is going to come in the time of the end. Now, let's go to Daniel chapter 11. That's just a little backup there, background. Let me just to make it quicker, verse 36 through 39 is where we talk about an individual that is not Antiochus Epiphanes, but a one at the time of the end. Antiochus becomes a type. Antiochus was an individual who was one of the divisions of the Greek kingdom. He was a type, but in the time of the end, there will come another little horn. And that little horn, of course, will be a part of the 10 kings of the fourth kingdom. Let's pick up here in verse 40, at the time of the end. At the time of the end, the king of the south shall attack him, and the king of the north shall come against him like a whirlwind with chariots, horsemen, and with many ships. And he shall enter the countries, overwhelm them, and pass through. The church used to think or teach, I know Mr. Armstrong wondered about this back many, many years ago, that when Ethiopians overthrew the Italians in Ethiopia in 1896, Menelaus II, king of Ethiopia, was the victor. Exactly 40 years later, Mussolini came in with his fleet and captured Ethiopia back for Italy. And of course, Haile Selassie was the king of Ethiopia. He came before the League of Nations. And to state his cause and everything, of course, it was a weak league, couldn't do anything. But I've seen him in the old news reels of coming before the League of Nations to plead his case in 1936. Was that a type? Well, we'll have to wait to see, but I think it was. Just like many things in World War II seem to have been a type of what is going to come. Mr. Armstrong always looked at when the Germans were crossing North Africa, and he would say on the radio, you know, that, you know, this is it, basically is what he was saying. And then he realized after the British stopped him at El Alamein that that was not the case. Because as you read on, and he shall also enter the glorious land, that is the king of the north. And of course, Mr. Armstrong recognized that the Germans were the king of the north along with the Italians at that time. And many countries shall be overthrown, but these shall escape from his hand, Edom, Moab, and the prominent people of Ammon. During World War II, there was no real distinction of these peoples that we know of. There is today, because we recognize, and I think the people of the nation of Jordan also understand, that a lot of their descendancy is from Moab and Ammon, and Ammon is their capital, and named there for where part of their descendancy came from. Well, where are the Edomites today? It says that Edom, Moab, and Ammon are going to escape when the king of the north crosses North Africa. He destroys the king of the south. You never read another thing about him after that. He's finished. That's over with. But Christ isn't going to return yet, because we're going to have a great tribulation take place. And when the king of the north crosses North Africa, goes into the glorious land, what is he going to do when he gets in there, among other things? Set up the abomination of desolation. That Christ, the only reference by Jesus Christ on the book of Daniel is in Matthew 24:15, that as is spoken of in the by the prophet Daniel, when you see the abomination of desolation. Now there's an interesting thing about that prophecy in Daniel 24, verse 15. And it says there, when you see it standing in the holy place, the definite or the indefinite article is not in the Greek. It says in the majority text, in the place, or excuse me, in holy place. In other words, you have the liberty to put the indefinite article a in there. Or you, of course, the translators put the in there or the, but it is not in the Greek. There is no article there in the Greek either way. It leaves it open. Now, I thought that's quite interesting too, because in Mark's account, on the same thing, it says, when you see the abomination of desolation spoken of by Daniel the prophet, standing where it ought not. Where's that? I don't know where that is. We assume why it's in the temple in Jerusalem, which of course doesn't, yet when you go back to Matthew 24, verse 2, he said, not one stone will stand upon another. Okay? And he's right. Ever since 78, there hasn't been one stone on top of the other. Now, a holy place is the Wailing Wall. That's something to keep in mind. Because our guide, when we were in Israel, some of the people on the tour with us, this is back in 1978, we had some very interesting 2 weeks with the guide and could be very candid and open with him. One of the members, actually from Pasadena, asked, well, when are they going to build a temple? And he didn't ask it exactly in the wisest way, you know, to him. But the guy gave a very straight answer. He said, we're not going to build the third temple. The Messiah will when he comes. And, oh, really? You said that. I can see that. If we tried to do something like that, we'd start World War III. And if you take a look at the situation politically over there, well, of course, that's what would happen if you go in there, because the Dome of the Rock is setting on the rock, and my wife and I have been in there, walked around the base of the rock. Can't do that today, but back then you could. Take your shoes off, you could walk around the inside of the Dome of the Rock at the base of the rock, and it is considered by the Jews the foundation stone where the Holy of Holies sat on top of it. And that's why the Muslims, of course, built that Dome of the Rock there, because whenever they conquered another country, nation, or religion, they always wanted to build a mosque or whatever on the other nation's chief religious site. They asked what few Jews were there, because it had all been cleaned off by the Romans, where was Solomon's temple? And because some of the Jews there said, well, it was right over there, not knowing what the individual, I forgot what his name was going to do about it. As a result, he allowed them to have a synagogue underground coming in from the Wailing Wall side, because the Dome of the Rock is not too far from that area. And they had, for I don't know how long, many years it lasted, but there was, for the small group of Jews in Jerusalem in about 650 to 700 in that period of time AD, that they would go and would have their Sabbath service under where the Dome of the, where the Dome of the Rock was being built, but under the foundation stone of the Holy of Holies as the temple once stood there. Now, I assume they probably know where that is now. I don't know if it's been closed up or just what the status of that might be. But it's quite interesting that because they gave this particular caliph that information, he then granted him that ability there to be able to, for that small group of people, about the size of what we have here, I guess, to have a service underneath the what used to be the temple at one time. Let's see, where are we here? Verse 42, and he shall stretch out his hand against the countries, and the land of Egypt shall not escape. Egypt was anciently the king of the south. Will it be the king of the south in the time of the end? We'll have to see. I've quoted from, what's his name? Who? Remember his book, the former guy who was the... Dory Gold, his book, very fascinating book. I've used it here before. He used to be Israel's UN ambassador. He quotes the highly sources off of Al Jazeera, including, I can't say these names right, Zawahiri, who was second in command to Osama bin Laden and who's now number one in command, and the U.S. is looking for him. Zawahiri said that the way to Jerusalem is through Cairo. And Zawahiri was Egyptian, and he's also part of the Brotherhood. And but he very openly stated, and I read it here, what was it, in the last year when I spoke on something on this, on prophecy, that first of all, before you go to Jerusalem, they want you. We have to attack Rome and Istanbul, where the two major religions are. And now, do you think that would prompt a response by the king of the north, if somebody from in the south literally did something like that? Maybe the Egyptian army realized that things are getting out of hand here, and we better take over. It may not have been the right time. We'll wait and see. But when you look at conditions today, any of these actions that are taken are not what you would call sound and sane. We have people who are doing some rather unsound and rather insane things, that are the actions that are being taken. I have to wait and see whether something like that is going to come about here in the future, an attack, not just an invasion of Europe in general, but an attack of the major religions by the Islamic extremists and so forth. If you did that, and especially if there was a pretty big destruction take place, that probably would cause a counterattack to take place. How much time between the king of the south attacking and the king of the north retaliating? Immediately? Or years to build up and do it? I don't know. We'll have to wait and see. But going on here, so Egypt is not going to escape. Verse 43, he shall have power over the treasures of gold and silver and over all the precious things of Egypt. Also the Libyans, Ethiopians shall follow at his heels. Actually, the Libyans and Ethiopians anciently were part of the king of the south. I mean, that total territory was a part of the king of the south. But news from the east and the north shall trouble him. Therefore, he shall go out with great fury to destroy and annihilate many. In Hebrew, there is no word for northeast, so you have to say north and east. And verse 45, and he shall plant the tents of his palace, the king of the north, between the seas and the glorious holy mountain. What seas? The Mediterranean on the west and the Dead Sea on the east. In other words, Jerusalem. And yet he shall come to his end, and no one will help him. This agrees with what was in the original dream that Nebuchadnezzar saw in Daniel 2, and about verse 44, that he will be destroyed without hands. And that's what it's saying here in verse 45. Let's go now to chapter 12, because it really gets interesting. You will recognize right away in verse 1, at that time Michael shall stand up, the archangel Michael, and the great prince who stands watch over the sons of your people. And there shall be a time of trouble, such as never was since there was a nation, even to that time. And at that time your people shall be delivered, every one who is found written in the book of life. How does one have his name in the book of life? By receiving of God's Holy Spirit, which comes upon repentance, baptism, and the laying on of hands that follows that, and receiving God's Spirit, and to use that Spirit throughout the rest of their natural life, growing in grace and knowledge, and letting Jesus Christ live his life in us. That's what we're coming up to here with the Passover, isn't it? Excuse me. You all recognize that? It's Matthew 24:21. Jesus quotes it. And in the Olivet Prophecy. Verse 2, and many of those who sleep in the dust of the earth shall awake, some to everlasting life, some to shame and everlasting contempt. And those, the verse that is similar to verse 2 is John 5 and verse 28, which I use and others do too in funeral services. Jesus talks there in John 5:28. That all will be resurrected, some unto the resurrection of righteousness, I believe, and the others unto the resurrection of damnation, which is an incorrect rendering into the English Bible. When you look it up, it is the word for judgment. And the judgment also is a resurrection. And, of course, the judgment is where it is referred to specifically as a resurrection is the one at the end of the 1,000 years. Verse 3, those who are wise shall shine like the brightness of the firmament, and those who turn many to righteousness like the stars forever and ever. Had an opportunity to watch a little of the universe last night. It was on, what was it, Nat Geo, National Geographic. And it was too early to go to sleep, but I didn't want to do anything else. So sitting there watching National Geographic, showing the pictures from the Hubble spacecraft over the years, or telescope, of the universe. They turned that telescope into one, like, looked like a big black hole. They never had been able to see anything before in whatever direction that was. They cranked that thing around, and they were absolutely astonished at what they saw. They saw over 100 million galaxies that could not be seen before Hubble was out there 250 miles around the Earth looking at it. It's a phenomenal thing to see something like that, and or to think about the greatness of God and what he has done and what he has made. Science has proven in the 20th century, starting with Einstein and coming forward, that the universe is expanding. None of us know, including the scientists, exactly how everything is done. They're still trying to learn it themselves, but they know it is, and they can prove that it is. Of the increase of his government, there shall be no end, it says in the Bible. And God is always growing. God is expanding. He is not static. He always is growing. There is no end to God's growth. God could not stand to exist doing nothing and not growing. And we're created in his image. We like challenges. We like to discover. We like to do things. It says we're made in the image and likeness of God. Well, okay, I assume God then is learning many, many things. We think, well, God knows everything. What's there to learn? Boy, well, wouldn't that be kind of boring? All eternity, I know everything. So what's there to do? It's an amazing thing when we read about the creation of the new Jerusalem, the new heavens, and the new earth, and what's going on there. It's going on right now, from what the Bible says. It's not something that's going to start up here as a project at the end of the millennium and kind of get ready there at the end of the millennium to come down here. It's going on. When you look at something like that and you see, it is mind-boggling to us as human beings to see the incredibleness, and it is to these scientists. You know, they don't give God the credit. It's evolution. And you think, what do you got, a block there in your head or something? how can you sit there and just say all of this is just time and chance? Now, there are scientists who do recognize and that there has to be a superior intelligence or God. And some excellent books out there, by the way, on that, which I, from time to time, back in January, I think it was, I gave a sermon on that as well. Let me get back here to finish this up. Verse 4 is always an amazing one. But you, Daniel, shut up the words and seal the book until the time of the end. Many shall run to and fro, and knowledge shall increase. Knowledge shall increase. It was pointed out to me by one of our members in Miami when I read this here a week ago after the service that the Hebrew word actually says, and knowledge shall explode. And, when you look at the last 100 years or 50 years, what I happened to see last night there for a short time there on National Geographic, the explosion is phenomenal, of knowledge, that is, that we're learning of things. They have, by the way, a super telescope that will put the Hubble. Hubble's going to be coming back into our, they're going to drop it in the Pacific Ocean in a million pieces, I guess, as it enters back in when they're through with it. And they have another one that's going to not be 250 miles around the Earth. It's going to go out there between the moon and the Earth. and set out there somehow, I guess, and see everything that Hubble could not see, and be bigger than Hubble too. I don't know, how far will God allow man to go? You think about the Tower of Babel. Mm-hmm. If we don't confuse their languages, what? Well, how'd that go? That there's nothing that they cannot do. And we see it here. Just a simple statement, knowledge shall increase. Absolutely phenomenal. Not just on that, and any area of science and technology, whatever it might be. The sad thing is that the knowledge of God, if anything, has decreased in man's understanding in general. And whereas, yes, he has all this science and everything else, and it is incredible for us puny humans when we look at it and see it. And he said it would be that way, but when you go to the book of Hosea, my people are destroyed for lack of knowledge, the knowledge of me, of my word. Verse 5, then I, Daniel, looked, and there stood two others, one on this bank and the other on that river bank. And one said to the man clothed in linen, who was above the waters of the river, how long shall the fulfillment of these wonders be? Then I heard the man clothed in linen, who was above the waters of the river. And when he held up his right hand and his left hand to heaven, and swore by him who lives forever that it shall be for time, times, and half a time. And when the power of the holy people has been completely shattered, all these things shall be finished. Now, how long is a time, times, and half a times? It's interesting also in the Bible, and particularly in the book of Revelation, that it is pretty well defined. Hold your place here. Let's go over to Revelation, the 12th chapter, and we'll take a look at that. In Revelation 12 and in verse 6, I believe it is. Yes, verse 6. Then the woman, being the church, fled into the wilderness, where she has a place prepared by God that they should feed her there 1,260 days. Okay, 1,260 days, which is divisible by 30, isn't it? And that comes up to 3.5. But now if you drop down to verse 14, but the woman was given two wings of a great eagle that she might fly into the wilderness to her place, and where she is nourished for a time, times, and half a time from the presence of the serpent. Well, we see up in verse 6, it's 1,290 actually years, it turns out to be. Here it's 3.5, or time, times, and half a time. In verse 14, I don't think it can be 1,260 years or anything like that, a day is as a year. If you go to chapter 13, verse 5, talking about the beast of the fourth kingdom, resurrection of Rome, verse 5, and he was given a mouth, speaking great things and blasphemies, and he was given authority to continue for 42 months. 42 months is 3.5 years, time, time, and half a time, or 1,260. A prophetic month is 30 days. On the calendar, the Jewish calendar, you have 29:30, 29:30. But in the Bible, you find that the prophetic calendar is 30 days. And of course, you see it here with the 1,260, the 42 months, all even numbers. And so we can understand what you have to look at the context, because the time, times, and half a times may mean 1,260 years of the time of the Middle Ages. Verse 6 it does, or it may be the 3.5 years of the Great Tribulation at the end, which will also be literally 1,260 days, 1,260 days. Now let's go back here to Daniel 12, and we have some other interesting numbers here as we finish up. Verse 8, although I heard, I did not understand. Then I said, my Lord, what shall be the end of these things? And he said, go your way, Daniel, for the words are closed up and sealed till the time of the end. Many shall be purified, made white, and refined, but the wicked shall do wickedly, and none of the wicked shall understand, but the wise shall understand. All right, the wise, who do you think that would be? Obviously, it's the church. Those who have God's Spirit, whose names are in the book of life, would be the wise in this case, and he says they're going to understand. verse 11, and from the time that the daily sacrifice, here we go, abomination of desolation. This is the only direct reference Jesus made to the book of Daniel. In Revelation, in the Mount Olivet prophecy. And so from the time that you see, in other words, it's going to happen again. We know it happened once. So from the time of the future, from the time that the daily sacrifice in the future is taken away and the abomination of desolation is set up, there shall be 1,290 days. Well, we know we've had 1260, now we got 12. What's this 1290? Not only that, look at verse 12. Blessed is he who waits and comes to the 1335 days. Now we have three sets of numbers right here in the end of this book of Daniel. 1260, 1290, and 1335. What do we know about these numbers? Well, what we recognize is that they do not all start at the same time, but they all end at the same time, and that end time is the second coming of Christ. Now, let's start with the big number, 1335. It says, blessed is he who waits. Well, obviously, that's not going to be people of this world. It's not going to be the wicked. It's not going to be those who do not know God or Jesus Christ. So again, the only ones who could be blessed would have to be those who have God's Spirit, the church. So that's why we have always taught and never seen any reason not to through the years that the 1335 has to be applied to the church or is applied, would be applied to the church. do you think anybody, you think Muslims are going to wait? Hindus going to wait? Atheists are going to wait? No, of course not. Who would wait? Hold your place here. Revelation, I'll show you who's going to wait. It says so right here. Revelation. Chapter 3, Church at Philadelphia. Chapter 3, verse 10. Because you have kept my command to persevere. Now, if you have a center margin, and I do here in this Bible as well as in my other one, it literally says, the word of my patience. I've always thought that was very, and that's what it is in the King James. I'm using the New King James Bible, but in the King James, it does say that, just as you see, and if you have a center margin, the word of my patience, you've kept the word of my patience. Does that sound like a group of people who might be willing to wait? Wait patiently, keeping the word of my, what is the word of Jesus Christ, patience? The word of God. And coming back here now, so I just thought that that adds a little bit to the conclusion there in verse 12, blessed is he who waits. And we see that what was said about the church there because you kept the word of my patience. You waited. And you continued to do and to do the word of my patience and keep my commandments. And comes to the 1335. Well, let me just quickly say what we have thought this meant. Well, before I summarize, verse 11 again. From the time of the daily sacrifice that it is taken away and the abomination of desolation is set up, there will be 1,290 days. All right, there's 45 days from 1335 to 1290, and of course 30 days from 1290 to 1260. We know that 1260 is the number of the tribulation, isn't it? Time, times, and half a time. At least that's what it says in the book of Revelation. Coming back here, we have wondered always, and I can't say we will dogmatically say it, we probably won't be able to until we get close to that time. But this may be the time that God gives his people that he is going to protect, and he will protect his church. For 45 days or a month and a half, remember I read there in Revelation 12, verse 14, about the time, times, and a half a time he takes, they fly into the wilderness. Where? I don't know. He doesn't tell us. He says he will protect his people who are faithful, who keep the word of his patience, at that who are alive at that time. so we have always thought that the 45 days of the 13, beginning of the 1335, is a time that God will give for his people to be able to go or be able to be taken wherever it's going to be. And we'll see if that is indeed the case. They are blessed. You think about the people there in chapter 12 of Revelation and verse 17, but then Satan goes after the remnant of her people who are not there. Why aren't they there? Well, is it because, like the parable of the 10 virgins, they didn't have enough oil in their lamps? They didn't believe. You can only just, I'm presuming. I can't say that I dogmatically know that, but you begin to think and ask yourself questions. Why didn't they go with the others? And there must have been something more to the story that we don't fully understand yet. Well, the 1290 here in verse 11, we have always thought that that is the time when both Israel and Judah begin to come under attack and begin to go into tribulation, which will officially begin 30 days later. And tribulation will be World War III that will take place. Israel and Judah, in one sense, aren't going to be in World War III. They're not going to be. That's what it amounts to. They're going into national captivity. That's what the Bible talks about, that the second captivity in Isaiah 11. You'll read about that in verse 10, 11, and 12. Because Jesus Christ will bring them back from their second captivity. Well, we know of one. We haven't seen the second yet. And of course, that will be when Jesus Christ returns. It's very interesting when you read also in Jeremiah 23, 23rd chapter of Jeremiah, in verses 7 and 8, and he will bring the remnant of Israel and Judah back from the north country, from Shinar, which is in Iraq, from Egypt and North Africa, where they've all been scattered, those who've survived, and he will bring them back to that land promised to Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob. And Jesus Christ will set up and put his temple there in Jerusalem and begin the millennium. So it's going to be something to watch and see just how we may not have everything detailed. We just have a kind of a, like Paul said, you know, you see through a glass darkly. It's still, we can't say we have all the answers on those two numbers, but I haven't seen anything in 40 plus years that has come along to change that, I guess you would say, assumption that the 1290 is the 30 days of the 1290 is the time of the attack of Israel and Judah. The 45 days of the 1335 is the church being taken away, so they are not in that attack. They are spared of what's going to take place. We'll see. We'll see. So I don't say Jim Haley taught something new. By the way, the church, we haven't, you know, we will have an article, by the way, in LHT coming out here on Daniel 12. And that won't be too far down the road here. All right. Dan, can you impromptu a song so everybody can have a little respite, and then I'll come back and have something else to say. Get two for one today.